You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamiting the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hey.
It's Niall.
Hello.
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering the anime that aired the week of the 27th of February 2020. No, 27th of January 2020. And then to the 2nd of February 2020. With the solitary exception of One Piece Stampede, which I guess aired here this week, but originally came out many months ago. And so we shall begin with Pet, episode 4 of a load of plugins. No, episode 4, A Trap for Hayashi. It's the problem of having shut everything down and then reopening things for notes, and it wants me to update plugins for them. So, in this episode, we get into a whole load of mind crime and a whole lot of mind espionage, and we get some terms, we get lookouts and carrier pigeons, we get a little bit more of an idea of how this company operates. It's like they're not just employing psychics. And it seems that they mention that the heads of the organization try and keep as many people between them and the psychics.
Yeah, intermediaries, so they don't have to deal with them, because obviously you'd be afraid of someone who can rewrite your mind. And also they have a separate kind of defense built up, whether that's like trained defense or actual guys to act as the intermediaries. Yeah.
They got a whole system here as well, where often you would kind of enter into the company as a pet. And then you would kind of work your way up and then become an operative, and then you take on a pet yourself, and then the process continues.
It's like a way of keeping them, not keeping them soft, but keeping them vulnerable or something. Yeah. It seems to be some method of control by the guys who are running the company, who presumably don't have psychic powers, but are willing to use psychic powers to get what they need.
And it's important as well as the person who takes on the pet, they sort of ingratiate themselves to this prospective candidate by like being, kind of sharing with them, showing them their peak and everything that their ability can do.
So make yourself vulnerable to them by opening up your heart, but also that means that they're ingratiated to you. Like they love you back as a pet would love a master, I guess. They don't use the word master ever, but that's the implication.
And because of that, then after a certain point, they separate them, so that emotional vulnerability or connection won't complicate things.
And it does give them a vulnerability as well. So
hence
that's
why Hayashi's been missing for so long, because he's had some thoughts about how the whole process works, it seems.
Except I think at the same time, he's not entirely... It feels like the story is definitely framing Hiroki as being the innocent, because...
Yes.
We see like how Satoru has... Yeah, he's been... Hayashi seems to be trying to make contact with Satoru again, but he's also... Has he been using Katsuragi to leak info to him? Because he's got a USB drive, and apparently all this was he's glad Katsuragi's alive, because everything he's doing wouldn't be achievable if he was dead.
Yeah, he needs a guy inside the organization that he's got a fucking good idea of, and he knows Katsuragi very well.
Well, yes,
he's just a sieve for fucking these guys. He's just every trick. He says, "I'm not going to fall for your weird mind power stuff," and then he immediately falls for their mind power stuff, because he did it in a way that he hadn't been done to him before. He's like fucking your one's dead and the cold and getting knocked out constantly.
Yeah, because clearly he's never had a pet, or if he had, they haven't stayed alive very long. But Hayashi knows.
I feel like human connection is not a thing that he does well.
Yeah, and Hayashi knows Katsuragi's valley and uses it against him.
Mm-hmm.
So his valley is that he's like the mistress's son, and his father's wife wouldn't let him play with his doll that he was pretending was his real mother. And then a man who owned a bunch of cats did let him, but then raped him while he was letting him play with his doll at his house. And that's why he's got a fear of cats, which Hayashi uses against him. And that's all done very subtly, because I didn't pick it up and I read people discussing the rape on Twitter.
I assumed it was abuse, but it doesn't out and out stages.
It's, yeah. Well, no, it does. It's one shot, which is framed very elegantly.
Oh, shit, I must have missed the shot.
Yeah, I missed the shot. Yeah. I saw a screenshot of it, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's very well done. Because he's basically, like, the abuse is covered up by the doll of his mother that he's staring in at into a mirror.
Yeah, he's focusing on a different thing to hide the trauma. Yeah, I see.
While the cats are all around. So we get, like, the psychics know they've got people in the organization who haven't got psychic powers, are lookouts spying on them, but then Hayashi's method was to then use them as carrier pigeons to deliver false information. He's taught that to Satoru, and Satoru uses that to get out of his hotel room to go and see Hiroki, and this is all news to Hiroki, that there was even such things as lookouts.
And we also carrier pigeons, yeah.
He didn't even cop that this shop. The point of it isn't to be a shop. It's just to be something that the company gave you to keep you sweet.
Yeah.
I'm glad they addressed the thing with Hiroki as well. I was like, was this something imprinted on him? But it's more so that he leaves himself. He's so good at being psychic. He leaves himself open emotionally. So he also wanted to open a shop. Like, literally, the cool idea that he read someone else having, he was like, oh, I'm imprinting on that.
Yeah, well, so, it's like Kenji's brain has leaked. Some of Kenji's personality has leaked into, because he mentions he's now better at swimming. And I guess that's also partly why he doesn't trust Satoru, because Satoru is the guy who killed Kenji's best friend.
Yeah.
And very obviously saying as well that his image is a goldfish because Tsukasa was the person who showed him his peak and his image is water, as he wanted to be the fish that swam in his water. You know, he was felt that attached to him.
Yeah, he wanted that kind of closeness. That's why he picked it. Mm.
And so Hayashi tries to escape using Katsuragi's car keys, but ends with Tsukasa stopping him. And meanwhile, Satoru thought he'd got rid of all the lookouts, but he also had two other psychics following him. Jin and Ron, I think, who we saw briefly in the previous episode, because
they were in the club, because you see the doll sitting on a chair.
I remember her, yeah.
Mm.
And they're now hiding in the pizza joint across from the fish shop. I can't remember which one's which, but the woman is trying to feed pizza to her doll.
I forgot to check out the name of their fake Pizza Hut, but I did enjoy the shingles instead of Pringles, the sneakers instead of Snickers. There were a lot of good brand name changes in this that I thoroughly enjoyed.
I think it was genuinely a Pizza Hut, because they've sponsored anime
before. Was it just straight up? Do you really want to advertise that Pizza Hut is filled with dangerous psychics? I feel like you want to disassociate yourself.
Yeah, come on down, bring the whole family. And, show.
And I wasn't sure if the fake brands were supposed to be like a clue that we were inside Katsuragi's mind.
Like things are not quite what they seem. Yes. I was wondering about that, but I figured it was just like a fun way for them cover
it's
up.
It's just an anime thing, so it's just, I kind of wanted to know if in the original comic he just went, fuck it, I'm putting stickers in here. It's in the publisher's try to stop me.
I did like the way that Hayashi had made the old lady appear sinister as well.
I loved his whole setup for the situation, because he knew Katsuragi so well. He knew he'd be cheap and not fucking tip the delivery guy. He knew he'd go to the cigarette machine to get change. He knew if he took the change out of that, he'd go to this place because he's fucking lazy. And it's just like, oh my god, this guy fucking pegged so badly. Yeah. Really good stuff.
This interesting sort of a turmoil. Like we Katsuragi in episode one, he's quite an intimidating individual. But
yeah, he's the cool guy in charge.
He's bumbling incompetent.
And yeah, even when it shows like it's one of their prior jobs, like he's like, I just mind crushed her. Is that cool? Like, I don't give a fuck. Like,
oh yeah,
you idiot!
Don't just mind crush her, you idiot.
Well, so he's a fucking like new hire on a job. And gets, geez, whiz, sorry, boss.
Well. Yeah, I mean, yes, it's bad that, but the pair of them had killed Satoru's parents.
Yeah, but they could have done it subtly. They could have covered this up very nicely and cleanly, but he went like, I just broke her brain, basically.
Well, yeah, Katsuragi's argument was that he wanted to have, it wasn't affordable, it wasn't, they couldn't afford to kill another person. Because that was the thing I was wondering about.
Because you have to cover up each kill. Like, you have to work with the guys, like the two lads hiding the bodies. And
yeah, because he despairs at killing people in the first. He'd rather just be crushing people rather than having to deal with hiding bodies and hiding weapons from people who have terrible ideas about where that you should hide them in the same location.
Yeah, because then he has to cover that up as well.
It's just like, you know, this, he's has access to these powers too, and you see the other operatives using him in a more like delicate, nuanced way, and he just has no style at all. He puts as subtle as a fucking sledgehammer through a window.
Exactly. Just, yeah. They're just like, okay, I think if we move that to the left, it'll be like more subtle and it'll match into Feng Shui, which he's into. And if we move it, and he's just like, I'm just going to tear the wall down. I'm just going to drive my car through the wall.
No.
Yeah. Probably it's such a nice change.
Watch too many action films. Just think he's a rogue cop. You can kick in the door.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is, I think, my favorite thing now. Sorry, Isoken Club, but, this is right on my street.
It's excellently made.
Yeah.
You can enjoy them both.
Right? I enjoy both, yes, but I was, yeah. This really hits a sweet spot of like everybody using their powers to try and get one over on each other and like using their knowledge of each other's personalities and,
Yeah, it's wheels within wheels, and also we're still kind of learning information as we're watching, which is it's a pleasant watch because you're kind of like figuring it out as you get more pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah, it's enticingly complex, but not to an extent that you have to just be rewinding it or pausing it every few scenes and kind of wait a minute and trying to. It actually has a very good grasp of the mechanics and the way that set when the plot points are going, despite you're kind of dipping into another person's memories or fake memory conjured in their mind. You're not sure which is which sometimes, but it does a very good job of keeping that comprehensible.
And that's a good job on the directing and the writing, that to kind of get that across without kind of losing it. Like I was clear, like from the context of that scene, I didn't see the particular framing that one shot, but it was interesting to me. It's like, oh, this is clearly abuse. Like that's clearly what the fuck is going on. And I'm not getting the specifics of it. I'm not getting the guy who did the abuse. I don't need to, because I've picked up from context what's happening.
Yeah. And this is one of those things then that, everyone will see probably a little something different each time. And then, oh, we got that little detail they didn't notice. And that's also, I love similarly as well, a kind of program that does that for, that's the kind of thing that you look forward to watching it and then probably rewatching it to see what things might have eluded your notice the first time around.
Meanwhile, it is Babylon, episode 12, the end. I forgot to mention last week, there was a very big, I know writers who use subtext, they're cowards. When in the opening, they just basically explained what the Whore of Babylon was and it rode on seven-headed.
Oh, God, yeah, that was so fucking blunt. Monster. I just forgot it, basically, yeah.
You guys have forgotten about it, gotten about this stage. Yeah, this is what we're going for. Gosh.
Yeah, sorry. I it was so, like, fucking obvious, I actually forgot to mention it as well. Yeah. Yeah.
So, in this episode, turns out, unless she's very fast, the girl trying to commit suicide was not Ai Magase.
I feel like that was a girl who Ai Magase probably put in place, or it's at least part of her fucking plans.
But I don't think she was hoping that the president would do such a good job that she has to then, well, maybe she was. Anyway, yeah, so the president figures out, he basically gets her to, basically his idea is, okay, yeah, I haven't figured out, you can't figure out whether you want to commit suicide or not.
Like, basically the thing, like, yeah, your one has had a really fucking rough life and shit like that, and not particularly, doesn't have any reason to live, but doesn't have any reason to die either. Yes. She's not, like, in pain or anything. It's just, like, she just feels empty from the shittiness that she's gone through. And he's kind of like, well, what you're trying to figure out is what is good. And that's the thing I'm currently trying to figure out. So when I do figure it out, I'll let you know. I'll get right back to you. Don't worry about it. In the meantime, and she's like, so you're telling me not to die because you want me to get off the roof? And he's like, no, I mean, like, I'm telling you, you can decide to die when we figure this out.
But the key thing he says, and this is the thing which sets Zen's alarms off, is that he says, if I figure out the suicide's good, then I'll commit suicide with you. Or words to that effect. But then
everyone's cheering, and obviously he's not talking directly to her because, like I said last day, he doesn't speak Japanese.
So
he's talking to, initially Zen's like, I will volunteer for the dangerous job of talking to this very obvious trap of Ai Magase, and his partner goes like, no, I'll do it because your English sucks, buddy. get back to elementary school with your wife and kid. And I was just
go
like,
home and be a family man.
Yeah, yeah, basically. Which is, yeah, it was a pretty good moment for
it
him.
It is a pretty good moment, too much. But this story is going to crush everybody.
Yep.
So he realizes that, oh yeah, okay, that is what good is. The good is just, he thinks back to Zen's talk about justice. And
Zen said something like, justice is continuing to try and figure out if you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And so he's like, so good is to continue and evil is to not.
And he's like, continue. I've got to tell that girl straight away. He picks up his, Bluetooth headset. And instead of going through to the girl, he immediately...
Instead of going through to the interpreter.
Yes.
Because he went to the interpreter and the interpreter was talking to him. He never talked to this woman because doesn't speak Japanese.
That's it, yeah.
It goes straight to Imagase going like, good job, Mr. President.
Oh, and now I realize that's where he's dead. Because I don't think we see him die until we get the recap of everybody who's died.
What? Like Animal House.
How does he describe it? It's something like, yeah, he knows what good is, he knows what bad is now, but being bad is so tempting.
Yeah, it's the idea that he knows that being good is to continue, and he knows that being bad is
to end.
But he's been convinced to end, so he can't really tell that woman that now. Because, like, it would be like a lie because he wants to end.
He wants to do it, but he doesn't want to do it because that's the face off with Zen. That he needs Zen to realize that he's got to do the thing that he gave him the gun for in the first place, even though he didn't realize at the time.
Yeah, at the end of the talking her down, like, everyone's cheering, everyone's clapping at your man, the FBI agent, and everyone watching at home on the TV is just like, because your man is keeping broadcasts going, even though they've said, could you please not broadcast this publicly? It's a very private thing. And he's like, nope, every channel.
Yes.
Just like, oh, what a good job. The president talked her down. And again, I was kept thinking, he's like, can you imagine if someone went to Donald Trump and went, hey, Donald Trump, you got to talk this person down. He probably wouldn't even fucking arrive to do it.
No.
Piece of shit.
Well, this is done over. This is done over TV across countries as well. That's the thing.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like, he wouldn't even stay in his chair. I'm not even asking him to get up off his ass. That's the thing. But anyway, Zen realizing it's like, oh shit, something's gone wrong. So he's running around trying to figure
it out. Stop using wireless communication. Everyone who's still got Bluetooth headsets in, commit suicide.
This is the last order. Everyone capture the president right now and turn off your Bluetooth headset because you will die. And like you have every now and again, like shots going off and the press outside the fucking G7 going like, what the fuck is going on in there?
It's
all gone to shit inside, yeah.
The president on the ledge of the roof, the media all over it, and then Zen on the roof, and basically the president is like, he's saying, yeah, if I do this, then she's gonna, not only is she gonna think that suicide's good, the world's gonna think suicide's good, so you've gotta do the things then. You've gotta kill me. So it's a murder, not a suicide.
He doesn't even say it's gotta be that. Like, as soon as I heard Imagase talking directly into the president's ear, I was just like, oh, Zen gonna have to shoot him. Like, it's just like, there's no other way out of this because, yeah, like you say, if the president kills himself, that will ratify suicide essentially as being okay.
Wouldn't this mean suicide bad, but murder is better somehow?
Means suicide, suicide good if he does kill himself. Zen fucking in a lot of trouble if he kills the president, but we didn't confirm anything or deny anything on suicide. That's basically the best case scenario, right?
That is it, yes.
She's forced Zane and the president into a corner where that's the only good option. Like he says to Zane, that's the last thing he says, like, you're a good man, Zane. And that's the it's basically like, this is the right thing to do, and it's incredibly fucked up.
Yes, and we've already established in earlier episodes that this is the right thing to do, because we had the conversation with the priest. And, in what situation is, thou shalt not kill overruled? This is the situation.
Yeah, basically that your neighbor is going to be harmed by this because obviously they have more of a thing. And it bugs me, like, they never talk about, like, suicide hotlines, or they never talk about, like, they've barely in mention passing, like euthanasia and that kind of thing. I'm like, they always talk about suicide in these really abstract fucking college thesis fucking terms, I think, rather than like practical people on the ground dealing with the terms.
I think there's also definitely, I feel like there's a subtext that talking about there is not being, not people who use subtext, but this does use a subtext. I feel like we've the focus on the children in Zen's moment of like focusing on his child, focusing on the president's child. That's the continuing thing. It's like, oh, what you should do is you should settle down, get married and have children. What you shouldn't do is go around whoring yourself out like Ivor Gasset does.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I mean, like, that is a standard thing in a lot of Japanese media these days.
Said that. I'm not sure it's doing that to tell you to do that. I feel it's doing that because that's the story he's telling. Because it wants to be a shocking story. Let's not.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. President is on the roof. You know, come on.
Yeah.
It wants to be incredibly shocking. Yeah.
It wants to be an offensive thriller is what it is. And he does a fantastic job.
Yeah. It's not there to actually do a lot of the philosophical waxing. It's there to have the philosophical waxing while, like you say, being a very tense, thriller kind of thing that just is upping the stakes every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of funny how, talk about it in the early days. Oh, this sounds like a much more like a prestige shooter. By the end, it's something closer to like Vatican Miracle Examiner.
I mean, like, that's pretty much why I like it. Yes. You're getting kind of like, if you want a serious political drama, it's a different thing. This is more 24 than West Wing. How about that? Like, you know,
it sounds like total airport fiction kind of stuff. Towards the end of it.
You have like Theresa May fucking stand in, kind of going like, oh, she's people are getting themselves killed and she's refusing to, they're getting the president to talk someone down. This is basically terrorism. And I was just like, calm down, love.
No fooling.
Then Ivor Gasset shows up, or does she? We don't know for sure, when we see
from other... there on the rooftop going like, congratulations, then.
Yes.
You did a bad thing.
But in the shadows, so that the TV helicopters can't see her. So when we see from the TV helicopter's point of views, we don't see her at all. Doesn't mean she's not there either. That's how... We should say, the direction of this episode, absolutely amazing. When they do with, as you say, because they're using the translator, when all the dialogue of the woman on the roof is in the voice of the guy playing the translator, we never hear her voice at all.
Yeah, but like one of my favorite parts is when, because like his mouth, he's speaking Japanese, obviously, but his words are kind of mouthing what she's saying anyway, but like offset, but it feels right because it's someone else translating. But when she starts laughing, when the president says, oh, if it turns out suicide's good, I'll kill myself too. And she just starts like, what the fuck? This is crazy. And obviously that bit isn't translated because you don't go, ha, 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 ha. But it felt really natural. It felt really like very good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And as I say, the back and forth at the end with Zen and Ivor Gasset and like,
when he pulls the gun on her and she just pulls like her fingers going like, I got you, motherfucker. I was just like, fucking hell. Yeah. It's not a really deep show, but it is a terribly enjoyable one.
She's like, so he's now figured out what good and evil is. Thanks to her help. And,
what a valuable lesson for frosty chocolate milkshakes.
We should mention that Zed's wife saw him murder the president. Well, on TV. Like
she's just watching, like, it's like the American president is talking someone down from the roof, and she's like, whoa, that's fucking crazy. I'm going to watch
please
this.
Please don't be Zed.
And then,
Zed.
Yeah, she sees the president's on the roof, and then she's like, is that Zed? Is he in America right now? What the fuck?
So then Ivor Gasset goes, says bang, and then we hear two gunshots, and we don't see who got shot, but we do see after the credits. If you stay for after credits, there's a post-credit scene.
Oh, I saw there was extra time in it, so yeah, I definitely stayed.
Zed's son picking up a woman's hat, which is blown into the street. And
he's in the countryside rather than the city where he usually lives. And oh, she's just got off the bus, and her hat blew off in the wind, and he hands it back to her because he's a good boy.
And we see that the lady whose hat blew off was Ivor Gasset. The end.
Coming for your boy.
Yes. Sorry, viewer, you have no hope whatsoever. Which I guess is the thing, because yeah, is that you can't escape the end, no matter what you try. So if she is the living embodiment of the end, then...
Again, I think without saying that she was like, she figures she's already won because to continue is good and to end is bad and everything ends. She figures like, yeah, like entropy, everything therefore is, everything leans towards evil. How about that? Is the way she views the world. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Cause we get like a, there's like a audio montage at some point of like all of her points that she's made to Zen over the series. Apart from the one episode, which hopefully they'll do some reanimation on.
Yeah, they might touch it up, sure.
As you say, if you're looking for something well made, but ultimately the story is, I say, it's not as out there as Vatican Miracle Examiner, because
not nearly. Yeah.
It tries to tie everything up, but then we never know why Ira Gassi is so supernaturally sexy. I think there's no other explanation than just he happened to be born that way.
That's the closest thing, like, you gotta accept that this woman has super sexiness, to the point of suicide. That's just the premise, and if you can't accept that, then you're gonna have awful difficulty watching this show.
Yes.
It's got good genes.
It's a superpower. It's straight up like Professor X type fucking situation. There's no denying it.
As long as you're looking for a thriller rather than a, sensible treatise on suicide, then,
You can see there's research been done. You can see they've looked into it and they've thought about it and they've researched like various things, but it's not
too deeply.
Like the different world leaders, the last episode, they're all kind of like in agreement with each other. They're all going down the same line of thought. And I was like, surely it's been presented that they all have very different views on the subject and in general different subjects as world leaders tend to do.
What it feels like is they took the three novels and they made the very best anime they could possibly make out of those three novels.
Yeah.
Except for that one episode, which obviously looks like the schedule caught up with them.
That's unfortunate, because again, the direction has been quite good in the show.
Yeah, and the editing and the sound and the fact that sometimes it had an OP, sometimes it didn't have an OP.
Yeah, it's clear like they really wanted to budget the time that they had available to do the show in. And in some cases, like it wasn't just they were trying to cram stuff in, it's just like we need the space to work in.
Anyway, now for some similar dark fare. Super Shiro, episode 16, Forgotten Umbrella. This time the bone is a forgotten umbrella at the Lost Property Office, at the train station. So I made some notes on the action. We got them climbing up the shelves to try and find the umbrella. Shiro finds the umbrella. He floats gently down while Dekapu tries to swim in the air to grab it or use a...
I was thinking that's a Lupin move, right?
Yes, yeah.
Totally. That's kind of like signature Lupin.
Yeah. Just alternately kind of falling and then popping the umbrella to increase and decrease velocity.
Then they get into an umbrella duel during which Shiro's inner superhero tells him, "Don't swing an umbrella around, baby."
Oh, yeah, because you don't want to give the kids a bad habit.
Between this and like the Lost Property messages, you know, make sure you take all your belongings into the train, baby. It just sounds like, oh, this is basic stuff, notices to the public you'd find around. But it was Aki Otsuka telling me that over the
channel.
I would definitely listen to it. But yes, sir, anything you need, sir.
Yeah, baby. And particularly as you said baby. Then Dekapu ends up doing that trick where you spin an umbrella and you balance things on it.
A unique talent I didn't know he had. Pretty impressive. Yeah. And I like the way he's like, oh, I can take way more than this. And it's like, this is probably my upper limit. And he's still throwing stuff up in the umbrella.
Yeah.
I don't know why he went on with that, but his pride would not allow him to let anything drop.
He's been a professional spinner all his life.
Because it's crime, obviously. Then he breaks out the Elephant Hoover mecha back. Which sucks everything in the Lost Property Office into it, which causes Shiro to end up accidentally dressed like a kabuki ninja. Which then, as you say, leads to, we have Aki Otsuka. This time, not only does he give us advice about leaving your umbrellas on the train, he does a song to activate his shrinking beam.
Same song you know, but done in an entirely different style. It's like, oh, this is a modern fucking renaissance man here.
And shrinks Dekapu, and then of course the umbrella handle explodes because it wasn't the bone after all. I do like how Shiro's confidence that it is the bone is getting weaker and weaker each episode. Sure?
It's definitely, maybe, probably could be this one.
It's not going well for him, really.
Was that another variation for you this week, Noel?
Shush. Yeah, it wasn't a good variety of gangsters, I would agree.
I mean, like, they obviously had a bunch of ideas with umbrellas and a few others that threw on top, which is nice. But next week we got the dangerous construction site, and that's a cartoon trope full of shit. I saw some girders swinging. I'm just like, yeah,
that'd be fun. can the bubble be like on a baby crawling around, and then the guy chase the baby around the high rise construction? Because that's, can they work it in somehow? I bet they could. I trust them. I believe in them.
Then, I think, because now it airs earlier than Irubicon, let's start with My Hero Academia, episode 79, Win Those Kids' Hearts, in which we get the retake for the provisional license with Shoto and Bakuga and
Inasa and
Kami.
Kami.
Yeah, well, she technically didn't have to do the retake, but she didn't partake in the exam. So she's not there in the class with them.
Oh, and there's a whole bunch of other people who don't have to deal with the children. They get to do the normal retake.
Yeah.
Yeah, their grades were slipping, so they just had to work a little harder. But these motherfuckers, they need some proper schooling.
Well, they've just displayed that, yeah, you guys can fight real good, but you got no fucking ability to interact with the public. And how that is equally as important to be a hero. So you're going to try and win over all of these scrambling 5, 6, 7-year-olds and show them, like, what kind of hero you can be, what kind of, like, someone that they're going to go up to. But these are all from the problem class, and it seems to be like one toddler behind the scenes who's just like manipulating all of them to act out.
Yeah, this definitely gives some light to various character flaws, and possibly character flaws of some of the of Bakugo's parents as well.
Yeah. The solution is we gotta find the ringleader. String him up, make kids throw rocks at him, and just going, dude, what? Violence, that won't solve anything. That's the way my parents raised me. I turned out fine.
I mean, like, it's clear his parents are like, yeah, we did something fucking wrong here. they know it.
I did like Shoto confronting his entire lack of personality.
And that's one of my favorite jokes. He's like, he's a very interesting guy. He's got a very interesting background. He's got a cool combination of quirks. He's boring as fuck. And when he was just reading off his character bio, I was just like, oh, that's fucking amazing.
As you may or may not know, I'm a Shoto Todoroki. I like Cold Soba. I'm the son of the number two here in Endeavor. My story begins in a small suburban home in.
Yeah. Good stuff.
And Inasa and Kami don't fare very much better either.
No,
he's close to winning because of his go-getter personality, but that means he's just as easily influenced emotionally by the kids. They can emotionally manipulate him as much as he can be fun for them.
And eventually, present Mike, who's watching this, cannot hold back any longer. He must MC the entire thing.
Because they're like he himself is there. Obviously, Endeavor's there, and All Might, and they're kind of just sitting in the audience watching a bunch of older kids scramble around and try and entertain small children. And they're just like, "Are we just going to sit here and not fucking like MC this?" And so yeah, he's taking master ceremonies. He's kind of going to their homeroom teacher. He's like, "What do you think about the scenario?" And the examiner's there, like, "Dude, don't fucking do this, man." We just sit down and mark them based on how well they do. Don't make a whole thing of it. No, but present Mike has to do it. What's your man's name with the purple hair?
Seiji.
I'm really liking that character because he's very dumb. And he also has to comment on everything happening.
And his teacher's
he's very
like,
loud yeah. and official sounding, but he's equally as stupid. So, but I'm going to join exactly. up with the panel here because your coverage is biased.
For UA, yeah.
Yes, his teacher despairs that he's too easily influenced. when he suddenly has disappeared from beside him, and then he's all of a sudden in the
like he's not qualified to do the re-exam, so he brought him here, I presumably to fucking learn something maybe by watching, and it's like, oh god damn it, he's so dumb.
It's like the gang workers saying, oh, you dummies, you couldn't even get past the first exam, you gotta do this retake, and then he's in the crowd front. Yeah, fucking idiots.
You failed too, moron! Gang Orca is great in this, because he's doing the whole drill sergeant bit, but, like, having to just, like, here, mind these kids. Win their hearts.
Well, that's actually quite a terrifying prospect. Who would let Bakugo on your children? Well, apparently it's the official government hierarchy thing that organizes these superheroes.
And meanwhile, we get Endeavor and All Might having a discussion about what it means to be the number one hero.
It's really funny that Endeavor's here to watch, just scream at his child. It's like, kick their ass, son! But it's kind of like, dude, you should be pay attention to what they're learning today.
Exactly. Yeah. He's trying to grapple. Oh, like I'm the number one hero. I'm where I always wanted to be. But I'm somehow like not living up to what you did. Crime is actually up 3%, even though I'm fucking out there every day fighting crime. And
he lists off his statistics. I was like, I have stopped more crises than anyone else. What am I doing wrong? And he's not asking like, All Might this, because that'd be like bowing to someone else's superiority, and obviously he considers himself superior at this stage.
Yeah, well, it's really like, the symbol of peace, what the hell is it all about? It's not what I expected. What does it mean? And All Might's going, well, it's a lot of things.
Like he didn't set out to be number one. It's important to be strong.
But it's more than that.
Yeah, like, he didn't set out to be number one. He set out to be the... like about a beacon of hope and a warning light to anyone who would try and do evil.
Yeah,
that kind of way.
But he also like kinds of makes the point that while it worked, it wasn't necessarily entirely without problems, and that
because he closed himself off to people, because he put everything on his own back and not relied on the people who cared about him.
Yes.
Or not let the people who care about him not rely on them. And
so he's
kind of
gently hinting Endeavor not to do that, which is...
Yeah, you find your own way, because my way, clearly, like, as soon as I fucking fell out, it doesn't work, for one thing.
Yes,
yeah.
And because Endeavor has kind of been trying to do that, but he's also got a family, and so therefore it's made it worse than when All Might was doing it.
Because All Might disappointed his found friends, whereas Endeavor ruined his family.
Yeah.
Little different, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, well, learning how to fucking interact with people on a very basic level. With like superhero powers or not, it doesn't make you fucking less of a fallible human being than anybody else. So it's important that Shoto's learning about, even though he can get on with people, he's been able to relate to the general public. So people will look up to him as a hero, and that's what Endeavor needs to figure out as well, whether he realizes it at this stage or not. But I think he's getting the first glimpse of it anyway.
Yeah, the start of it, sure.
Meanwhile, they end challenging the children to a fight, and then the teacher's like, "Oh no, that's terrible! Like everyone thinks it's going to be a light-hearted thing." He's going, "No, those children, they legitimately think they could beat them."
Yeah, see, the thing is, right, if, like, and they pointed out as well, if they beat up a bunch of kids, those kids are going to be like, so you guys are just going to step on us like all the other fucking adults. All right, fine. But if you go like, oh no, you got me, the kids will think they're superior and you've still fucking lost. It's a lose-lose.
Unless there's some kind of way out of this they have not anticipated before that doesn't involve having to fight each other, but also involves using our abilities.
Mm. Some of those kids have some weird abilities. I'm looking forward to that.
Well, yes, they'll be getting into that in the next episode as well. Because those kids' weird abilities, I think, is a key point in the story going on.
Mm.
It was a good lighthearted episode. We still haven't seen... I don't think we've seen Endeavor yet without his flame beard. I think we will soon. But...
You see a picture of him, like, with the family, where he's got a big scraggly thing on. I think it's... Oh, no, wait, maybe that was the end credits thing.
Could be,
yeah. Yeah, that's probably
the... we'll see him without his beard a lot more going forward. Since we realise he hasn't actually got a beard, he just makes one with flames.
Well, I mean, like, technically it would be burnt off, right?
Yes.
Hmm.
Or are they? But it is one failing. You can't. He's grown his facial hair in a very patchy manner.
Is that like a commentary on like where you like they say like public figures and whatnot that you shouldn't have a beard because if you have a beard you look untrustworthy? It's like a mask on your face.
Yeah,
or something?
Quite possibly. I was told that when I was at university as to. Not when you go for an interview, don't go with a beard because people might think you're hiding something. I'm not sure that would be true today with the propensity of beards around.
Yeah. I used to get stopped by cops and shit the whole time because I look like a fucking skit. I look like what they think a drug dealer look like, whereas as a drug dealer has a nice suit because they can afford it. I don't fucking have that shit, dude. Oh, dear. Beards are fine is what I'm saying.
Yeah. But I do still wonder, based on the recent general election result, whether that's not true with, still true with older members of the voting public.
It sounds like a fucking medieval superstition, and the fact that this to the year of our Lord 2020 is... I don't know. A very big read on humanity.
Yeah, you the amount of stupid stuff. I mean, I know somebody who... not this election, but the previous election, wasn't going to vote for Ed Miliband because he'd been mean to his brother. That's what you're dealing with, people. That's the sort of people you did.
I voted for a guy in like years back in our town council thing because my sister nearly ran over him in her car. Because he wandered out in the street so dejected that he'd lost an election a prior year. That he was just like, oh, I can't believe it. I'm so fucking... And I was like, there's a guy with passion. I'm voting for him. He cares that he lost. Most people are just like, fine, I'll just fucking run again. But that motherfucker got pissed because he was so, like, drunk pissed. It seemed like a good idea at the time.
I vote for him, I hope. That man's name was Hendrick.
No.
I'm still not as old as Endeavour yet. I will be shortly.
Oh, no! Well, I guess that's fine, because it'll be less weird, like, talking about kids' shows. It's like, no, let's talk about the parents now.
Good chance when he... Well, no, when he comes back... he has a good chance I will be his age when we get the arc, which focuses very much on him. We'll just see. I'll have a greater view on him, even though I haven't got a massive family.
You'll have the same like cultural references. Yes. You'll be into the same movies, into the same music. It's going to be great.
And I may have a massive scar from fighting a supervillain. Good episode this week. And then we've got Welcome to Demon School, Urumakun, episode 18, What I Want More Than Anything, in which this arc finally ends.
Thanks, Fog.
Yes, thank you. I liked how it ended.
Yeah, the ending was
good. Oh, yeah, I liked the way I was like, is this guy going to be redeemable? I was like, no, he's a super creep. It's just such a creep.
He just lays out his rather hackneyed backstory. Which had a nice angle on it. Here's my hackneyed backstory where, like, no, I was bullied because I had no powers, and I made friends with a girl who also had, like, no, like very little power. And then we got into, I think, with the bullies, and then they threw her favorite, like, little, like, keepsake into the river, and the look in her face when I failed to stop it happening, it was great.
Oh my God.
The sweetest thing of all, human misery. I love it so much.
I was wondering the whole deal with him having one horn, and it's like, I cut off one of my horns and gave it to her, going like, here, you can wear this instead. And she nearly got sick. I was just like, oh, so delicious. And I was just like, oh, you're just a weirdo. He's like a super fucking weirdo. Like, okay.
Remember, oh yes, but that's because I'm a demon, of course, because this is what demons are meant to be, evil. All this thing about getting along with people and learning how to be better people. No, we must be spreading disaster and chaos. That's what my senpai Baal taught me.
Yeah, so he wants to reduce everyone to the same level of chaos where everyone's trying to fuck each other over in hell and just constantly scrabbling and fighting. And there's no level because everyone's at the bottom.
Yeah.
Because we all suck.
And then Room is like, you know, his eyes are cast downward. Says, yes, Room, show me your face. I want to see you. Look at it when my plan comes to fruition and you fall in the depths of despair. It says, Room is just like, dude, just stop.
Getting dejected
doesn't help anyone. So.
Yeah.
I'm just going to solve this problem.
I'm just going to get a bunch of boxes, climb up here, take this off here.
Yeah. Because, you know, I've been some tough times myself, but it didn't get me down. I've been, you know, like, awash on, like, a tuna boat in the middle of a rough storm. My parents sold me into indentured servitude.
And, Several times.
But, you know, it happens to you enough, you kind of just kind of learn to get on with this. Yes. And don't dwell on the past and look forward to what you can do in the future. That's what I've been doing here in the school, having a good time. So, and then it's just like, she's taking it back. Fuck. The one person who has been to the depths of despair all the way down, hit rock bottom, and climbed all the way back out of that hole again. In a way, he's like my arch nemesis.
Well, no, yeah, he doesn't even think that the narrator, like, rubs it down.
His natural enemy. Like, that was, it was all handled really well. It's kind of more what of the show that I expected.
Yeah, and Sablock's still holding up that
display. He's like, how much longer I got to hold on this stand? He only actually drops it when the big cool thing happens at the end.
Yes, because
everyone gets distracted by.
Yeah. So it's basically like, oh, if we're if you don't get rid of that firework, it's still going to blow both of us up. Then he uses Ifrit to shoot it out through the window, but then he can't get through the barrier, and he's like, well, the only thing which gets through my barrier with all the magic I'd stored up in that necklace would be Sullivan's magic. Sullivan's magic. I shall break my promise and activate the infinite part of the ring, Pandarula, which it then grows black wings and fires it out through, smashing the barrier. What a pretty lot of firework display. There was also like one spot when he's kneeling down in front of Kiriwe where he's got Aruba's got a very suspicious shadow. So I don't know if that's foreshadowing or what the deal is.
Literal foreshadowing.
Yeah, they also mentioned him being like a bringer of light, which is obviously what Lucifer means.
Yeah,
morning star.
Yeah. I think there's like obviously there's loads of hints that he's going to be the Demon King, but I think it felt like there's other hints that he's not.
We see him on the throne of the show. Yes.
Where you see him on the fucking throne.
But there's also, I think there's hints that he's not necessarily what he thinks he is.
Yeah. I figured like a half-human type scenario, because his parents do sound like pieces of shit, honestly. Yes. they sound like what the demons want. It's like, we sold our child into slavery.
So yeah, I do like the fact that there's a school for delinquents in hell. So, like, your behavior can be even beyond the pale for demons, that they've got to send you off somewhere.
Like demon society.
Yes.
Back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then next week we get two parts, the second part being the most promising, Family Time.
Finally get to see Shrapnel do that play.
Yes. And Asmodeus look terrified when his mother comes to hug him.
Mm. And we get to see them interact with all of her siblings, and because her parents. Whole family's coming, isn't it?
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that's what
it sounds. It's something to look forward to. Yeah,
there's Shapnox and the sister, and there's just lots of just probably embarrassing parents and other like associated family members turning up.
No Tsukima this episode though.
It's a serious one, more or less.
Though the preview was by the eye girl who did give her name this episode, and I've forgotten it already.
Oh yeah, shit. Can't think of a.
As you say, it's a great twist on that sort of background. It's like you want to have sympathy for him, and Aruba kind of does have sympathy. He has sympathy for Aruba because he saves him in the end. It's like this weird sadomasochist personality he's got, where it's not just he wants to see people despair. It seems like he wants to see people despair that he's let them down in some way.
He feeds off any kind of despair or disgust, or just like he likes other people suffering, basically.
And
it's like, fun, please admonish me, shout at me, just like give me out to the woodshed, punish me, anything. I want more and more.
Because it's like when he had the conversation with Baal in previous episodes where he's like always describing him as his beloved senpai, and then Baal's just abusing him on the phone, and he treats that like being talked to by his best friend in the world.
I did like when he shows his background of like sneaking into the school and it's like, hey, this little punk came into the magical society thing. What should we do with him? The guys, they're holding like a fucking sword and he's like, that's a nice sword. How many people did you kill with it? He's just rubbing it on his face and the dude's like, oh, Jesus, get this kid out of here.
Then we've got Inspector, episode 4, Idol Dies by Steel Beam. Dwayne, you're the only one who watched it. So tell us what happened.
Let me try and remember. Let's try and remember the names of the characters. Failed. Okay. So we got our girl heading back to the police officer's apartment.
If I recall correctly.
Kotoko. Yeah, she's brought her back to the apartment. She's just giving her like a band-aid, you know, a little giraffe sticker or whatever the fuck. I don't know. Whatever she's got in the medicine box.
And she's kind of thinking like, okay. Saki? Yeah, Saki, I believe.
Saki, okay. Yeah, she's giving her that. And your one's trying to insist the whole time. Is like, yeah, I'm totally going out with your ex-boyfriend. I know this is very embarrassing for you. And she's like, you don't look like his type. And she's like, ah, but like maybe his type dumped him and he's not into that anymore. He's into me, baby. And she's like, I don't know, that doesn't seem real. It's like, and then there's a wonderful thing where she's like, oh, check out these pictures of us going on a date. And just loads of pictures of him looking so fucking dejected.
I've seen those floating around now.
Oh, right? They're like, good.
I'm sorry, I didn't get around to it.
it's good. I would recommend watching it still because basically your one just picks apart her story where it's like, yeah, I don't think you're going out or that you're serious or that any of the shit that you're saying with regards to him is true. But they are both investigating the same thing. Your one says like, okay, next time you see the ghost, don't just run the fuck away because I can fight her and you can't. So that's just how it's going to go. But, and even her sergeant is like, yeah, obviously this is just someone trying to cover up maybe another crime or just trying to use this urban legend to cover something up. So we'll look into the actual crime. She's like, oh yeah, totally. But the whole time she's investigating the death of this idol. So basically the idol, she wasn't a big thing, like she got scouted by some old creepy dude who ran a talent agency going like, nice tits. And she's like, fuck off, old man. And he's like, nice personality. I'm going to make you a star. And her manager like got her a job in some, there's a whole like sequence of the show. It was like Fiery Girl, something. I can't remember. The Girl Who Breathes Fire or something like that. And, that costume that, the steel idol wears is the same costume she wore and that she was famous for. She was involved in some scandal where her dad looked like he was in an accident, but apparently like she hated her dad and he was worried she was going to kill her because he quit his job to live off her fortune now that she was famous. And there was a heavy insurance policy on him, so she had to lay low while she was heading out between different places, between different hotels, just avoiding the press. She like basically woke up dead in a construction site after some random passerby saw her. And the cops going over the case files, our girl is basically looking it up in an internet cafe and they both find out there's a, what's it, Steel Mackie Chan or whatever. There's a wiki for this, ghost pop idol.
Steel Lady Nanase is the name.
Steel Lady Nanase. Sorry, I couldn't think of the name of the thing. But yeah, as they're going over, especially like our one who's into the yokai, it was like, so I couldn't talk to her. And most yokai are actually pretty friendly, and you know they're happy enough to talk to me and everything. But she wouldn't respond to me at all. But and even if it was like a spirit that was like, I need to kill, it was like I wasn't getting any malevolence from her. She's just like an automatic puppet. Like there's nothing in it, and the costumes. Thing, if the costume is just like, yeah, it's a good look and the lack of face and the carrying a steel beam that killed her. It's all like, it's a very manufactured, thing, isn't it? It seems to be suggesting that it's very like maybe like a Slenderman situation where it's like, this isn't a real monster.
That's cool.
That's my thinking, that it's like a made-up urban legend. Like, what are, you know, those creepy pastas and that kind of thing. That it's like that brought to life. I think that's what they're suggesting by there being like a fan page that has a really accurate painting of her, almost like the person had seen her or designed her. And that's the kind of thing they're getting with. But she's kind of like, I need more information on her, but I have to go to the cops. And there's only one cop I know in town. Ugh. So she sends like a wood spirit, like this old dude who's just screaming at her, the cop to, they're like, please, you need to help out our wisdom.
God of wisdom.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you. And if you don't help her out, I'm just going to send like all my brothers here, and I'm a god of a tree, and I know a lot of trees because I live in a forest. And she's like, that's harassment. But yeah, she agrees to help her out. But in the meantime, while waiting in a restaurant, a dead boy, a ghost, appears under the table and goes like, hey, the steel lady's shown up downtown. And she's like, oh, fuck, that's actually pretty close here. I guess I better go check it out. When your one arrives here, let me just smear that blood on your face more so you look more freaky. When your one arrives here, grab her boobs and butt. She loves that. She's just like, I'm trying to make life hell for this ex of my boyfriend. And she kind of cycles off, and the steel lady's there fighting her boyfriend. Yeah, it's pretty good. It's basically like, and that seems to be a lot of the show. It's not just like crime scene stuff and trying to figure out a motive and that kind of stuff. It's very like Cold Case, where they're like, okay, we need to go over the information on this to find out its relevance to the thing we're investigating now.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying that aspect of it. And also just people like outplaying each other. The closest your one can do is just annoy her, whereas the cop is actually good at deduction and telling when people are straight up fucking lying to her face. It's still a very enjoyable show. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
My solo joint is Rhea Solger, episode 44, Bonds Put to the Test. I didn't watch the previous episode. I just jumped straight back again with this episode. So, but from the opening, I could see that a new Druidon had been born, and that Sedon had kidnapped Otto. And the last thing we see before the credits is Creon has Weasel's heart still, the card that Precious had made of his heart, and is going to try and make the fun days return. Don't you try and stop him. He pauses for a minute and waits for the henchmen to try and stop him, and is almost like slightly disappointed that they haven't. But nothing of that comes up this episode after that. So our heroes easily rescue Otto by doing a bit of distraction, trickery, and then they battle Sedon. Sedon runs off and they follow. Apparently there are two Gunjoges, the new Druidon, one who can talk and one which talks like a toddler. And then Eris gives birth to an entirely brand new Druidon who's like a crying baby at this point. So clearly they are like literally born, and then they assume grow up fairly fast. Baby Druidon attacks the town, so they have to split up. Ko and Asuna deal with the Druidon, and the rest go with the Ryu Caliber into a cave to destroy Eris. And then they... where were we? Yes, they run into the child Gunjoji and Sedon in the cave. Ko and Asuna have to face Precious, the adult Gunjoji, and this new Druidon who's called Yabasword, who looks like a samurai. Green is suspicious about Sedon. Meanwhile, back at Yui's dad's house, P-Tan is crying because he's frightened of Precious. I assume something happened in the previous episode to make P-Tan, that's the pterodactyl who turns into a plastic egg. So Yui's dad tells P-Tan how he deals with fear, which is just scream at the top of your voice. Doesn't have to be anything to do with what's happening. Just scream and you'll get over your fears. And so then to save Asuna, Otto. Yui is still, I miswrote my notes. Otto rides in on P-Tan's back and then turns into the humanoid form. And kicks the Yabasword Druidon, saying, Mark Dacascos, Mark Dacascos. And to which Otto goes, I don't even know who that is. And then I was like, okay, I think that tells me who directed this episode. And that would be Kenichi Sakamoto, who I believe worked with Mark Dacascos on Drive and probably some other things. Then I realised, I should have realised that because of all the Dutch angles and the heightened fight choreography. I was like, yeah, of course, that was just the major clue I needed. He's doing next episode as well, so that should also have some good fight choreography. So meanwhile, back in the cave, Baby Gunjoji tries to become a suicide bomber when defeat looks certain. Apparently Precious had told this toddler to commit suicide if it looked like you were going to be defeated. And then Sedon removes the bombs, which confirms the suspicions that our green Riosoga had. And it turns out Sedon is actually Master Black in deep cover in the bad guy's ranks. Some of the rest of them are kind of doubted him, but they're like, let's hear him out. They go to destroy Eris, but the Ryu Caliber is not strong enough to destroy Eris. And then in turn, the Master Black is surprised that they've been following Seto's orders. And he's like, Seto, how do you know Seto? We don't really know him. He just appears. He's like, they don't mention that he possesses somebody to talk to them, so he appears. And so, Master Black wants to go and speak to Seto. So you kind of left thinking now, as the viewer, okay, have they been taking orders from the bad guys the entire time? Is Seto actually a good guy or is he a bad guy? What is the deal? I think we've got about 4 episodes left. So things are heating up and I'm going to guess we'll definitely get a happy ending. I just wonder whether we'll get, whether Master Black will survive the entire rest of the series or whether he's going to get killed next episode. And whether people will be brought back from the dead for the final episode and whether Ui will come back from America from filming that film to establish that she was actually a main member of the cast for the first quarter of the series. Mm. And I didn't get a chance to watch Kamen Rider 01 because it hasn't been fan subbed yet. Mm. So I'll have to jump 2 episodes for next time. Then we've got Gegege no Kitaro, The Misty Knight of Angkor Wat. This is the show where I can't remember what happened at the end. I did just try and remind myself of it while you were talking about Inspector.
This is sort of like a Kitaro story and doesn't really have much input from Kitaro at all. It just kind of witnesses to it.
And Kitaro was there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the key thing which made me go to rush to Wikipedia is when the two events... So it's basically they've been invited to a play which is based on an event which took place in 1968. And I was like, okay, 1968, that's when the first series of Gegege no Kitaro aired. Where this the theatre director and his girlfriend started
poking... Award-winning theatre director. Didn't even Mana recognizes the name of.
Yeah, started poking around in an investigation that Kitaro and Nekomasume and Nozomi Otoko were doing in Cambodia. Because a Japanese man's girlfriend had gone missing for 4 years. And turns out, but then this other girlfriend, Sara, goes missing that very night because they've been kidnapped by a ghostly warrior who appears to have kidnapped a massive
I think your man rang Kitaro because A, he was Japanese, and B, it was actually samurai ghosts, which is weird because, we're not in Japan. Yeah.
Apparently they've been finding a whole bunch of, they've kidnapped a whole bunch of women, but then after this ghost finds Sara, he stops all his men fighting Kitaro because he knows they're going to get their asses kicked if they fight Kitaro. And besides, he doesn't need to take any of these women with him now. And they wander off, leaving all the women returned. Then 4 years later, was it 3 years later? Yeah, 4 years, 72, I think. He's written a play based on this event. And then during the play, the ghost reappears and his girlfriend, who's playing the part of,
he's playing the part of your man's lost sister.
That's it. Yes. Cause
the part of herself, really, isn't it?
Yes. Cause the story was that, yes, this warrior accidentally killed his own sister after their village was poisoned. And yes. And then, she commits suicide during the play, when the ghost shows up. We also get, Nekomasume in some 70s fashions in this episode.
That's like pretty fun, yeah.
That was a good thing.
Concrete Revolution was back. at this point I was like, okay, it's very interesting that they picked 68 and 72. What's the deal? I looked up on the wiki, and I was like, okay, the guy playing the director's name's highlighted. I'll click on him. He was the narrator in the 68 and the 72 series.
Oh, okay.
He also played Salaryman Yamada in the 68, 72 and the 80s series. But obviously the narrator part is what they're referencing back to in this story.
Yeah, I was wondering
myself.
Because
he's telling the story a lot as well. Yeah, yeah.
I was wondering myself about the dates as well. And I thought, did it have anything to do with the Cambodian Civil War and then the Khmer Rouge taking over the country afterwards? Because the Civil War started in 68 and in January. So I guess they got out just before it started, huh?
I guess, yeah, because I was wondering if it was going to be a political story, but apparently not, though. It was more a Homar. This is an existing story from the comic. But I think they've embellished it to sort of tip their hat to the former narrator. So then the bit at the end when they go to watch the modern retelling of the play.
Because, yeah, this is the new play the Kidder has been invited to, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, it turns out the director is the reincarnation of a man who was in love with the sister. And he'd poisoned the well as a way to make sure
to not get the invading army to attack them.
Yes.
The invading army would spare those two, and he loved her so much that he couldn't have her killed by the invading army.
No.
And then Manor gets possessed by the spirit of the sister and his girlfriend, or just the. This is where reincarnation gets very confusing.
Spirit, because she was a reincarnated spirit. Yes. So she was both.
By extension, yeah. There. Doing the same body.
But it's like, hey, I was just going to torture you for your entire fucking life by you going like, hey, why the fuck did my girlfriend, or my wife, kill herself? And that's why, but you know what? You're forgiven now. And now you can die of the cancer that you have. The end. And I was just like, that's kind of lame.
Yeah. How's Killer going to explain this to the theater manager as well? It's just, you got a dead guy in the front row here. Alright, Kitter will go, that's not a human thing. I'm out of here and Man is going to deal with this deceased gentleman. What?
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. Yeah, I'm not sure, like, tonally it kind of works because it's like this tale of tragedy and reincarnation. Doesn't really work for me. Maybe it's a kind of story that other people appreciate better.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, like, why anchor what? Why is that to be...
It's a very specific place to pick. All right,
interesting backdrop, and even then you have to import in your own samurai guys to begin with. So, go with it at all?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether they were. Or maybe that was just what the guy was describing them as, because they didn't have particularly Japanese names, did they?
They didn't, but their fashions and everything else clearly were. So,
but, yeah, I feel like I'm not sure whether. Culturally, this is. I don't really know many ghost stories from here, so I would like to say whether there's this just as many ghost stories as disappointing as this one in Europe.
Sure, I mean, you're gonna have some duds in there. I mean, like, how many fucking episodes of Kidder are we in?
I've read some old like horror writing, like Edgar Allan Poe, and the like, and it's just like. And then they opened the door, and there was a skull inside, and then that's the end. That's fun. That probably was very shocking to a reader back in the day, but nowadays, yeah, we're a bit more
hardened
to the world.
Yeah.
I think it's just the reincarnation thing makes it tricky.
I feel like
that's
someone's favorite trope, and that's kind of why the story was the way it was, you know?
Yeah,
they thought the idea of reincarnated suffering was like deserving of your old past self or something like that.
Yeah,
I
think in the original story, it's just the guy who hired Kitaro in 68 and his girlfriend, not even his girlfriend. I think it might just be a woman he meets. But I don't know whether that is in one of these books or not. I thought I'd written a list of them, and I can't find where I'd written the list now. So, c'est la vie, that'll be that question. I will answer another day. Then we are finally on to Keep Your Hands Off Aizuken, episode 5. An Iron Giant appears. Actually, not finally, because we've got to talk about One Piece Stampede as well. Penultimately. An Iron Giant appears. Iron Giant appears in One Piece Stampede as well. But they've got a job. Well, Kanemori's got them a job, which is making a promotional video for the Robot Club. This is after they'd... Well, but first of all, we got Asakusa discovering a robot, which she
Oh, she builds up this whole fucking conspiracy.
Yes.
Like.
Yes, yes.
That was great. Like the different
lines. The guy with Sasaki, they brainwashed her to their cars, and Karamori's in it too.
This goes all the way to the top. But wait, what if I'm in on it and I actually have fucking amnesia? And it's just like, oh, come on, kid.
Yeah, the claim that she's an adult now from the first episode becomes further and further away from reality. The more we see.
Well, she was a latchkey kid who was watching cartoons for most of her like formative years, so it would just make sense she'd have this kind of view on the world.
Hmm. And I do like the way they present her her imagination being a thing that is bad for her as well. When like, yeah, she's got a lot of imagination. Time to go to a place where she finds scary, and she's just like, oh shit, fuck, I hate this.
That's why
I can picture all the things that could go wrong.
That's what kind of more trying to spoil them as well. It's like, I got you a job, you know, we got like, some money for it now, so we're going to do it right, okay? And this one said, well, wouldn't it be good if we, you know, just had to
animate for the pureness of animating? Yeah, yeah.
We've had like unlimited money. You can make animation all the time. And we're saying, no, because you've agreed to take someone's money who's, in a fair contract here, it puts a certain responsibility in you. And thus, a certain focus to get things done and present.
You want to do a good job for the client. So instead of just doing, I'll just do jobs, whatever. It's like, yeah. No. You specifically have to do a thing. Therefore, you feel like you have to do a good job in it. Therefore, you will do good product.
Yeah.
It's a reasonable,
responsibility and consideration to others is what can motivate you and give you focus. So, like, it might seem constraining in one sense, but it's actually quite.
It's focusing in another sense. Yeah. What I enjoyed about this episode is, and I was hoping they'd get to something like this, is dealing with clients. That's the thing you're going to have to do.
Yeah.
Oh, not so much compromises, but they don't have a fucking clue what they want.
There are some choice bits. Just Caramore laying it out. Here is the ramblings of a man who has this grasp of...
He's a very specific, non-specific idea in his head. Yes.
But he has no clear vision at all. In any event, in like a total ideal of what the finishing would look like. So he's just... Just keeps spotting out nebulous concepts.
He wants real robots, but we have real robots, but he doesn't want those real robots.
Can't be too real, but it can't be too mundane either. Can't be too fantastic. But, you know, what you basically say is you want a grounded, down-to-earth robot that's completely off the wall and swarming magic powers. Yes.
That's exactly what I want. But not that.
Stuff by watching.
Also, they're constantly... Because they have a robot which has been handed down throughout the
club. I love the fact that they said, we're a 100-year-old club. And I was like, how the fuck are you guys a 100-year-old club? Well, if you go back to this old tradition, we're that. And then they invented robots in like Europe. And then we're like, oh, we're into robots now. So it's like, oh, you just changed the name of the club, but the focus has been kind of the same. Okay, gotcha.
I the evolution of style as well.
That's pretty good too.
I want to like mash that more closely with some designs over the decades and kind of see what elements are lining up. You can get like an idea, but some are still escaping me.
We should say also that the person who they're talking to, I wonder whether the other three are supposed, but the one they're talking to is very much Megane from Yurusaitasura. And I do wonder if the other three match up with the other, because there is a really tall one, but he's the one with the perm, and perm isn't the one who's really tall.
shit.
I could be falling into the tropes as well. I thought the robot club president guy was just based off someone specific they ever had to deal with. It definitely feels like an homage to something. Yeah.
Well, besides animation, like people who work in this client-based industry probably encountered a scenario like this, very similar, multiple occasions.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure whether you normally should go into the view of blackmailing them as Kanemori.
That's not my first goal, but I did like the way that they were trying to knock on the door politely while they were screaming. It's like, we gotta fuck up Aizouken, guys! Here's my fucking plan! And, you know, just taking pictures of them with their big whiteboard of plan to destroy Aizouken. And they're just like, oh shit, Rumble.
I think we said, go on there, we're going to play the long game with this. We'll like, capitulate to most things, but we'll just try and gently kind of nudge things in the right direction and make
it act. Yeah, her plan was perfect. It's like, we'll do all our own ideas, but we'll put in one or two of their ideas so it makes it look like we're doing what they want when mostly what we want.
It seem like they thought of doing what we actually want to do. But then it's like, this is their camera phone out. Oh, this is much easier.
But the other problem is that the Robot Club don't have any definite ideas. And also the other two members of her team end up bonding with Ono over their disappointment in the reality of the world.
I fucking laughed out loud. Not an LOL. I was laughing out loud at that. It's like, I want to explore space. And then the bit that really got me is like, I practice Hadoukens every fucking night. That's fucking brilliant, man.
I thought I was the only one.
We all want to live in a world of fantasy, and they bond over this, and it's like not really good to our negotiations, but all right.
Yeah, but bonding also is good. They also represent the youth who do not care for giant robots, because when he's trying to explain what a real robot is, they're like, but are real robots like these, and they're showing all the whichever that company
like
is.
An Asimo or something.
Yeah,
like that. Yeah,
but the ones who the robot horses and dogs and things. And he goes, no, no, bigger. And they go, like a JCB.
No, not like that. It has to have legs and arms. It has to fight. And it's like, but it's more practical to give it wheels. Like, wheels can carry a lot more weight, and especially treads. And it's like, no fucking tank treads. Legs. Has to be legs.
But you see, sir, because of the realities of modern mechanical engineering, why maybe to get like a good kind of functional enough humanoid size robot, as you scale upwards, it becomes more and more complex, and as such, you need to design downwards, it becomes less and less and less humanoid. Hence the JCB.
The human space of frame like can only take so much weight before it breaks. Like the spine is a very poorly fucking designed thing.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. But once they've agreed on the fact that at least three of them in this group mourn the reality that they live in, they then start haggling over what the robot design is going to look like, and it kind of ends up looking like a robot from Time Bokan 24.
Yeah, like it's something between like a fun old style kind of robot. I did like the head that they came up with. That was pretty nice. The roundedness of it.
Yeah.
Very, very toyetic. But the other thing I really liked about it was they kept giving it like, they initially give it a chainsaw because it can use the chainsaw in these cool ways. And then they were like, well, what if we give it a drill? And, you know, it's like obviously riffing off some other things, but they basically made a construction robot. And I was like, oh, that's actually not a bad idea. That's a good compromise that gives you lots of cool tools.
And then the story writes itself because of we gotta have
a
like,
monster,
you know,
attacks. We have a monster in town, robot nearby.
It can't be bigger than 3 meters because that's like 3 meters tall is how big our role model is. That's pretty big, yeah. But giant monsters, you know, in that case, you just come on and just send in the army, but the tanks and machine guns sort it out. No. I don't know.
Yeah, I like them going. I love the notes on the robots. I got to go back over all of those. But I also love the two conversations happening at once where they're like, a giraffe is bigger than that robot. And it's like, we could have a fire-breathing giraffe. And it's like, what kind of giraffe are you thinking about? And I just have this completely fucking mad conversation. It's great.
As we say construction robot. Don't think Pat Labor, though. Do think Time Bokan, because it literally looks like a construction worker who is a robot.
Yes, that's the thing. Like, yeah, I like the fact that they're going off the riff of, like, we're scaling up a human here, so let's scale up, like, a construction worker into a construction robot. Yeah, it's a more kind of fun, roundy, bouncy design with it, which works quite well. Yeah. And I did like her trying to explain, because her naturalistic kind of idea, it's basically she's upgrading a pistol shrimp into a giant pistol crab monster.
Turtle. It's a crab-tle.
Crab-tle. I forgot the word for it. Thank you. It's a crab turtle. And they're like, that seems way too powerful. It's like, I'm just upscaling pistols for him, man. And that's a thing that exists. And when she explained, it's like, oh yeah, some people use them as beasts of burden. And I was like, that's just a big cow then, isn't it? There's a cow on the loose. Get the construction robot. So they're trying to like make it nearly mundane, which I like kind of pairing it back to make realism in their fantasy.
But it'll explain, like, why would this thing be, like, showing up to deal with this, like, rampaging beast? Oh, yeah, because it just happened to be nearby, and the army
was doing construction work.
The
army. Yeah.
But he has the tools he needs to take care of this. So, away he goes.
Yeah, and we also get, at one point, Asakusa, like, I think she had her head in a neck of a coat last week as well, when she was doing her speech. But this time it's
trying to hide, yeah.
Well, this time it's trying to make herself look like Boss Borat.
Yeah.
I was like, once I saw it, I saw the screenshot, and then once I saw it moving, I realized that's what she was trying to do. Or Boss Robot, as apparently people on Twitter is now the official name, according to Super Robot Wars and Mazinger Z Infinity. Boss finally worked out how to spell robot.
Finally got his high school diploma after all these decades.
I did like them, like, searching the, it's like a sewerage kind of drain system or something like that, because they think it'll be like a cool, spooky location for the monster to appear, because it's going to be set in the school, because it's set in the school club.
Oh, yeah, and Askusa's got her survival kit for being underground. Oh, the anti-poltergeist kit, isn't it? That's what it is. But yes, but she's correct. She's correct that it was dangerous, because they end up falling through a floor, which she thought was dangerous. And they could have died from gas exposure. But luckily...
It's like, lucky we landed on these leaves. But these leaves are soft because they're mulching up. Gas! We got to get out of here! And she, like, puts together this fucking MacGyver plan that she's clearly, like, planned, like, way, way, way before this.
Yeah, it's really good because that would have been, oh, this is the crisis. It'll take up half the episode, but right out there in 10 seconds. Because as it was prepared. She was
planning all these fun, exciting scenarios for years, is what she's been doing, yeah.
Yeah, because they tease her about, like, what other things have you got in your bag? And they're like, wouldn't you like to know? And then we do get that the payoff of that the same episode.
Apparently, yeah, at least a length of rope and a Swiss Army knife.
Yes.
Yeah. And a shovel.
Oh, and a shovel. You're quite right. A collapsible shovel.
Golden shoes. Yeah.
Several torches.
Important and stylish.
Mm.
Then finally, me and Niall went to see One Piece Stampede, the latest One Piece movie. It's very One Piece. In fact, it's probably...
Excellent. That's what I would want from a One Piece movie.
It's almost too much One Piece for your eyes to take in at one time.
Yeah. I've got to go back and make it a home video on this freeze frame, especially on the opening like, credit sequence for all the cameos. I've had a couple of them, like, just whizzing by, like, you know, like, continuing every second, it's just going bam, bam, bam. It's like, I became a feeling. There was some Skypiea dudes. There was fucking Hachi and Kami running the fucking trap. Oh, there's too many dudes here. I can't count them all. There must be more in there. There definitely is more in there.
Yeah, there's even, like, anime-only characters all hunt. Grant shows up when there's a bunch of Marines showing up. I was like, there he is, the guy from one of the good non-canon arcs.
That's the one where they land after Skypiea, is it?
It's the one where it's the one... between Zoo and Whole Cake Island.
Okay.
He's like a marine captain who's... he's like a Luffy version of a marine captain.
I thought it was the lad from when they landed, and it was basically like they all had to pretend to be Marines.
Oh, I'm sure they're probably in there as well, but I don't know who they are. Yeah. I never saw that arc, but...
There's so many guys in there. Even like characters who are featured as part of the plot of the film barely get a look in. They just often just stand around the background being imposing and then jump in at like literally the last second.
Yeah. I did appreciate that in all the imagery of like who's teaming up, there was one person deliberately left off that list. So that actually was a genuine surprise when they showed up and teamed up with everybody. And to the point though that other characters keep his teaming up secret from other characters because they're like, I'm not sure they're going to be on board with this guy teaming up with us. There's one gag, which they did three times, which is exactly right. Once they did it twice, I was like, okay, I'm allowing you a third time to do that gag. And they only did it three times, but it's a really good visual gag. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's super One Piece. And also it felt like the people making this saw Broly and were like, okay.
Yes. very much.
We can do better than that.
Down, in
that
vein.
I think it was the character designer, or it was one of the animation. It was the character designer who was like, did a bottom of like, did the animation on Broly. But as well, like, he's just a dude that gets in for some of those, character design and animation director on, Fidem Z and Strong World. But kind of, he's been kind of working his way up to the director's chair, for the last couple of films. Okay. There was that Broly feel to it and some of the action and the effects bits.
Mm.
Yeah, and also the pure showing off of it. And the director, I think, did a bunch of the Pretty Cure All-Stars. So they have plenty of experience of handling a massive amount of characters getting involved in a story. It also felt like a lot of stuff in here was fights you want to see, but the actual series may never get to.
At this stage, yeah.
Or possibly ever.
Yeah, you would get to see most of those other Worst Generation pirate crews get to have a little sequence for themselves, and we get to see, oh, wow, it'd be like if Zoro fought Killer, at least briefly. That'd be pretty good.
Mm.
Yeah, because that would just be tragic if that happened now in the point in the cult.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you get to see all their boats. That's the other good thing. You get to see.
My model is coming soon.
That's why yeah. I went straight to the went straight to look to see if they were out. Because I was like, oh yeah, definitely need want some of them. I'll upgrade my Islebound board game once again. trying to think else what to say without spoiling the story. Not, I mean, the story.
I mean, like, just... I can mute you for a sec if you want to do straight up spoilers.
We'll tell you off, Mike. But, yes.
Okay.
It is like, it's nice that as well, like, we've seen this a lot recently in, with Short and Jump things primarily, but, how recent media, or this film came out last year, or maybe this, any time of seeing it, it just feels that way. And this is just more of a coincidence than anything else. But often in the recent anime media of a lot of Shonen Jump properties, we see the kind of an echo or reflection of, what's currently going on in the comic version. So we have things like, you know, here's like, you know, when it first introduced this character in Dr. Stone, and then the current space in Dr. Stone, the comic is reminding you, is involves that character, but then, oh yes, that's their whole deal now again.
So maybe I feel we're getting like, better at the direction of cross media promotion.
Well,
they're actually timing that up a little better.
Yeah, I think they just bully Oda until he can give them some stuff to put in, from what I understand from interviews. They just convince him. He doesn't necessarily, because basically there's a recent scene in the comic which appears here first.
Oh, that's right. I remember him talking about that. Yeah.
So even though this is non-canon, there are canonical scenes in it.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
And this isn't just from playing around stuff. This is, like, genuine stuff. There's a flashback going on or has just been gone on in the comic involving Gold Roger. And there is a lot of, lot more things dropped about Gold Roger in the film as well. And I feel as well, the nature of it, it speaks as well of the actual allure and value of One Piece. And how it's something you have to really work toward and strive towards. There's no shortcuts in it. There's no, ways to kind of circumvent it. And I feel as well, that's kind of Oda saying, we're probably so close to the end, you don't even realize it. If I told you the ending right now, it wouldn't be as valuable.
If you just read the wiki summary
And build up towards it, it'll like be all worth it. You can't cheat One Piece. You can't take a shortcut to it. It's all about this voyage we're on all together. And we're so close to the end. You guys have no idea, but just bear with me and we're going to get there.
I'm kind of worried, like, he's like, not so much from the comic. I think the comic's going to be fine, but that a lot of the cross-media stuff might mess with him because people are going like, oh, they're finally doing, like, a live-action One Piece. Oh, it's bound to be good if he's signed off on it after all these years. And I'm like, are they just going like, dude, you have to do the live-action now while the fire's hot? Once the comic's over, no one will give a shit anymore.
He signed off on that like a couple of years ago.
It's been in production now, or
it's in pre-production or whatever it is. But basically, that's Netflix have picked it up, and they're going to be the one putting it out on their platform. And but that's still going to be a couple of years away. And
sure.
Even then, I'm not even sure what the hell mold is going to take.
It'll be something different because you can't keep somebody 17 years old for 20 years, like in a cartoon.
Yeah, and just even think of like the crazy shit that goes on in One Piece. Just Luffy himself is a guy made of rubber, which can be done in live action, but
well, yes,
can be done as satisfyingly.
Just the physicality of him, obviously, and a lot of the characters, they're more so cartoon characters than they are like comic book characters, if that makes sense. They're very like Tom and Jerry squash and stretch kind of thing.
Yeah, but I feel like they've done the live action stuff with the adverts, and they've done those school adverts where they're animated in an entirely different style.
The realistic one, yeah.
So I feel it's flexible enough, I think, that you can do different things with it. Besides, we've got to be disappointed in the Cowboy Bebop live action first.
Something to look forward to.
I think people will, you know, get into a lather over whether positive or negative, and it comes out, it just bubbles under without much further discussion. And you kind of wonder what got you so pent up in the first place.
The thing I'm looking forward to with a new Cowboy Bebop live action coming out is watching Cowboy Bebop again.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, that's a good excuse.
I would say as well, possibility of more just spin-off merchandising things, you know.
Yeah. Merchandising.
Add some good stuff related to this. This is technically based upon, you know, just to coincide with WWE's other live action series. But we can still put the cool design on this bag or this jacket, say. And
Would you complain about a re-release of the Swordfish, like, as a model kit, which is what the show was initially intended to sell? No, I wouldn't complain about that. That's a cool fucking model.
Yeah.
I do wish, though, that the One Piece was being done by Yuichi Fukuda. I think it was a really low budget, and we had Jiro Sato as Gold Roger at the start of each episode, giving a different monologue improvised about where One Piece is.
Some say it fell behind the back of the couch many years ago. But no, it's no one's turn to do that this week on the chore list, so no one has bothered for many weeks now.
Come on, people, release more Yuichi Fukuda stuff in English. I want to watch those Gintama films. And the Psyche K films. Very frustrating.
Oh, well, it's a nice idea, a nice thought.
It is.
When would you find a time to watch it all?
That's true. I probably would for those.
So based off Stampede, do you think, like, how many more One Piece films do you think they're going to knock out before?
Two.
Before it's done in 5 years? Around.
They'll do one after it's finished. That's assuming it finishes in 5 years.
Like, I'm going
because the anime is still going on after the comic's finished, so.
That's true, yeah,
this feels like a preview of the ending as well, with everybody there, because I suspect that's how it's going to end.
Yes.
Yeah. Everyone on the big mad treasure dash.
And mass destruction.
Is anybody, I guess Weevil, because this is set before, I think, because Law's
it's
still...
It's post fucking Doflamingo.
But they still refer to Law as a Shichibukai, though.
Yeah.
Oh. It exists in a weird space beyond
like
canon.
All fucking One Piece movies, yeah. It's like, where does this take place? Because the crew hasn't been together for years.
It takes place in the modern day.
Yeah, because I guess there's none of the zoo characters are there, are they? And none of the Doflamingo characters are there.
No, but you do have Cavendish and Bartolomeo.
That's true. So that must be after that. Yes. Yeah, great. And this was the first time Nami saw the their boat.
Oh yes.
I do notice in the credits like the Emperor Penguin form and. Nami's bikini were designed by Bandai Spirit, so clearly they were both designed to sell models.
Yes.
And all their casual clothing is designed by the Uniqlo design group. So clearly they were designed to sell real clothes to people. I do like Brooke's summer body shirt. It's my favorite of those gags.
That was pretty good. I hope I can get like one of those.
There was
like a fart joke with Brooke, which is just like, it's funny, but only on, an extent of the fun. Okay, oh, someone found this fart out there. It was Brooke. Oh, sorry about that. Okay, yeah, but don't do it again. Wait a minute. How, what? It's like, it's not funny as a fart joke, but it's just like the quandary it poses is where the humor lies.
It makes more questions than it answers. Yeah.
They even get Blackbeard in, they get all the admirals whose faces we've seen, they weren't tempted to show us the face of the third one yet.
No.
The Blackbeard's right at the start, because basically the villain is basically the guy who was too evil, even for Blackbeard to take on to his crew in Impel Down.
Is this kind of dude who's been just too heinous for anybody, really, because he was in the Marines, he got kicked out. He was on Gold Roger's crew, and he got, well, kind of kicked out.
He just went off on the bender when Roger died. He's basically Thorfinn after a point.
He just keeps getting discarded by the people who he thinks care about him or who he won, like, fights for, and now he's fun saying, well, I'll just blow everybody up.
Yes, because a guy who's shown up who's thought to be dead 20 years ago, and he's reappeared on the scene, Festa, and he's my favorite character because he's the real villain. And
I think he's thinking about like a whole global operation here. He's like thinking, oh, well, if Gold Roger started this Age of Pirates, I'm going to start an even crazier Age of Pirates.
Yeah, because he used to be the biggest festival organizer until Roger came along and started this Age of Pirates. And I mean, he had other problems beyond that, but as it's kind of hinted at and then revealed. I liked how they did that. It wasn't like super staged. It was like, this thing was found here. And it's like, okay, that's where he disappeared to. But yeah, both the performance and the animation, were, really good on that guy.
Yeah, he's not primarily a voice actor. He seems to be primarily, like I could say, a popular, live action, TV and film actor in Japan.
Yeah.
The people love him.
And yeah, the other two guest characters are the MC for the Pirate Festival, who's one half of Nankai Candies playing them, and a member of one of those ridiculously large idol groups plays a character who originally appeared in a amusement park display, played by somebody else who's like a singer, and she has a power which eventually pays off right at the end. It's like they introduce her power and you're like, okay, that's coming back at some point.
Oh yeah, you're wondering why when a factor into the plot or anything like that, everyone said, no, we've had lots of cameos so far, we got room for a couple more.
Yeah. Yes, they get an impossible cameo in. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I watched it a ridiculously early time in the morning, but I was tempted to go back in the afternoon and watch it a second time. That's how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I enjoyed my time overall. I was similarly super deprived because I got up early on a night shift before going into work to catch a screening of this. I'm not really massively keen about big chunks of film being taken up with Fight the Giant thing, which it does in the middle stretch. But there's enough of it either side, and it descends in the finale into a straight old just fucking slugfest. I was satisfied overall by the end, and yeah, it's just complete One Piece mania. I can imagine this is probably the feeling I should have gotten that the wider wider audience got when they see like Avengers Endgame, which just left me stone cold. But this is probably similar to what they may have experienced, but you know. In which case, this is how I saw him. I talk about One Piece, I'll be quiet forever.
Would you recommend this film to people who have not watched One Piece as a way to get started?
Well, oh God, no.
Well, based on comments I've seen, apparently yes.
Oh, really?
Hmm. I mean, it's definitely more accessible than the first Gintama film. The first Gintama film has a very accessible opening and an ending, but the middle bit is not dazzling enough to keep your attention.
Right.
Whereas I feel this is visually dazzling enough that you can get over the hump of
not knowing the relevance of stuff. Mm. Yeah.
It's just there are so many One Piece characters who you may not have prior knowledge of. You can still probably like enjoy
that. There's a weirdo in the background, I guess, is the way you're going to look at it if you don't.
Yeah, know. I feel like that's the case. I don't think because it's non-canon, it's not relying on any of the relationships for plot purposes. The relationships are only there for fan service purposes. And it's as a visual production, it's at such a high level that it can probably carry itself beyond. It's not relying on the fan service. The fan service isn't the only thing it's got. The fan service is like the sprinkles on top of the ice cream.
Ah, I see. Okay.
I wonder who did the first Everyone Teams Up to Fight a Big Thing. This works a lot better because as people who rely on that as a crutch, your boy on the Yokai Watch movies is the guiltiest for it. Because he wedges them in even where that feels like it should not belong in the story they've been telling the previous hour. And then it's like, oh, got about half an hour left. Someone better turn into a giant monster. whereas this does feel like, it feels a bit like the CG bit in Broly in that it's a bit of a tech demo, a bit of a showing off. But the actual creation is really good. The effects when it turns into the creation, not so much, but it works decently well with the standard 2D animation against it.
It is preceded as well by, which would have been enough spectacle in itself, of a traditionally animated giant robot.
Mm.
Which you can see in the trailer, that's not a spoiler.
Yeah.
But it's just like, huh, that's also, that'll be enough of a showpiece in itself. But then they go, nah, we gotta go a few gauges up here.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it feels more Go Nagai than Ichiro Oda in terms of what he ends up as.
Right.
Though I guess a bit of, as he's getting a big old box set, a bit of Tetsuo movies as well, as it's constructed out of a load of junk stuck together.
Hmm.
Because the villain has the Gatai fruit. You can make things combine. But yeah, I've got, also, I mean, yeah, additionally, it's like, even when he does the thing, the fruit is, he then explains what the fruit, the additional thing the fruit does, in case you haven't watched that arc of the show, to know that you can have the, what do they call them now? I forgot what they call them. The, what Doflamingo had of, you can make your fruit pet or affect things which aren't you.
Oh, it's a wicked fruit power. Did you drop the little things in there to remind you? Oh, do this thing. Well, I won't say what it is just in case. But, you know, just like enough of, like, maybe particular terminologies or phrases that crop up in a story of one saying, oh, yes, it's this. This one they do X, Y, and Z. It's well, maybe to kind of let newer people know what that means, and as well to remind you what that means, because it might have been so far back in the comic you might have forgot what that signifies either.
Now, I know you had a problem with Rob Lucci standing around doing nothing for much of the film. I did like how they were saying, don't let anyone, don't, nobody let, rule number two is don't let the Marines know this party's happening. And then we, this is being said as we see a shot of a suspicious looking man in a top hat with a suspicious looking pigeon in a top hat on his shoulder wandering through.
Yeah.
which is still a better disguise than what Smoker had as his disguise. But, is when Fujitora shows up, who feels like he has the flimsiest reason for being in this film.
No, he's not. He's fun. He's the Zenigata to Luffy's Lupin. He's got to catch that Lupin. He's got to chase him to the ends of the earth.
But no, Smoker's Zenigata. Fujitora's just shown up to see what would happen, and also to fight Zoro, because apparently we may not see that fight any other way.
Smoker can't be Zenigata. Smoker is effective.
Fujitora seems impressive, and no, he was like, no, it's well, he's been given his orders. You're not gonna be allowed to come back to fucking base until you get that fucking Luffy. Those are the last orders he was given by the Marines. It's like, you got, and it's like, yeah, I'm gonna chase that Luffy to the ends of the earth then. And that's what kind of put me more in mind of it.
Yeah, but what he says doesn't make any, he doesn't say that though. He just kind of says, oh, I just came here to see what was going on.
Exactly.
And now I've seen what's like, going on.
You could be here. As soon as you heard once the ruse was fucking shown up, it's like, oh yes, well, Luffy is there at all these other parts. I'm going to catch that Luffy now. It's like, that's why you're there, right? That's literally your job you've been given.
But then he wanders off.
Just say that.
Presumably because if he hung around any longer, he'd want to join in the final fight of the movie. Having said that, it does give a great well, it's not the best Zoro moment. The best Zoro moment is when he can't find his way back to the Thousand Sunny, even though the Thousand Sunny is right in front of him.
That sounds about right.
Well, another ship came along and it confused him. But he didn't walk towards that ship either.
No, he walked off in the opposite direction of all ships.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
But the Fujitora is also a pretty great stupid Zoro moment. He hasn't thought things through, as you.
I did a good thing.
Anyway, go out and see it. I'm sure they'll show it again soon. We've got the My Hero Academia film airing next, which I don't think I can get to because it's a weekday night. Also, it's not currently airing in central Oxford, and I don't fancy going to The View because it smells. my review.
Shots fired.
I said that.
My review of The View. Not a fan. But if it does show up in Odeon, then maybe I'll nip into there. I hear the second one's better than the first one. The first one's up on Netflix now, isn't it?
Oh, is it now? Okay.
I think, or maybe
I thought it was up in dub only or something.
Or
I might be thinking of something else.
Or possibly not in our region. My Hero. I know Two Heroes is up. Let's see what it's available in. Let me mute site first.
Uh-oh.
You're very lucky it didn't play a pop tube. No, it's in both audios, Japanese original and English.
Okay.
Two Heroes is up, along with half of Pop Team Epic. And,
oh, yeah. God, yeah, that was a fuck-up.
Well, is it a fuck-up, or was that just what they were given?
I feel like if that was some fucking guy like looking at it going like, oh, shit, they've given us doubles of the episodes, I'll fix that.
Whereas I don't feel that's the case. I suspect it's... I feel like that's like anti-Netflix hysteria making people think that. I think it tends to be they just put up what they're given.
Why would they be given half of the fucking show? That doesn't really make sense. That unless, again, someone fucked up somewhere down the line.
It seems a very Pop Team Epic thing to do. They may have Pop Team Epic Season 2, which is just the same episodes again, the other half. That'd be the...
Oh, that would actually be pretty funny if they did that, though. Because people are like, wait, I already watched this one. It's like, nope, no, you didn't.
Yeah, well, you're doing people's sites now over how the phone saying everything is anime. Pointing at everything in the room. Anime, anime, anime. That's like,
And besides,
what you're saying?
It's not like there's a shortage of other places to watch Pop Team Epic.
No.
Sure.
You probably like printed fucking UMD copies of that. You can play it on your fucking PSP.
I thought Little Witch Academia went, but it's still there. Or maybe it came back.
Maybe there was an outcry for us, or maybe it's just like, you know, trying to...
Just had to renew the license.
Wait, average the scarcity to drive you to watch it.
Mm.
And then you got all the Ghibli stuff as well. It looks like Black Lagoon's back as well.
Oh, is it?
Maybe even more stuff has come back since I was last looking.
I know that a bunch of things were taken down, but that's like standard as they lose the license and renegotiate licenses and that kind of thing. I'm not too worried, yeah.
Yep. So that is everything this time. So I've got I've got a slot for another anime now, because not watching Babylon next week.
Mm.
So I guess I should watch Inspector if you guys are watching it rather than add something else. But maybe I'll watch something else. Maybe I'll pick something at random.
Well, give it a go if you get a time and see if you think of it. If it pulls you in, then...
It's been enjoyable so far, but... Yeah.
Maybe I'll watch Interspecies Reviewers.
Yeah. Cool. Wow. I had to resort to extreme measures to get that. I will have some Healing Good Precure for you, hopefully, next week as well, which I didn't get to see yet, but I saw the opening. It looks pretty good.
I see. I could watch that. That might be the thing to watch.
Yeah. Well, it's a new Precure, and it's also, I'd say, half of a jewel pet with all of the cute animals it got in it.
You say cute animals, so it doesn't sound very much like jewel pets. I mean, jewel pet as this
cute looking,
cute looking, yes. Terrible monsters in real life. I think the Sunshine fan subs are just about finished now. So not long before I can sit down and watch all of that, but I may have to go through every file and rejig the fonts, because the fonts the fan subs have chosen are nearly unreadable.
God.
Oh, actually, if I just watch them through something which could alter the fonts rather than have to rejig them. Otherwise, that ends this week's episode of Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. Anything coming up on The Secret of the Sailor Madness?
We're in preparations for talking about some Treasure Planet very, very soon. And I'm happy to announce we have a stalwart compatriot joining us on this voyage. It's one Joseph Wade of Christmas Creeps and the OST Party. So we'll talk about some of that and in a reversion of our Treasure Island that we've been on our minds recently, and have a look at it and see why it didn't set the world on fire like it was meant to.
And from us at Dynamite in the Brain, it was still the same, the anime that didn't make us that I talked about last week, because we didn't record anything this weekend, because I was off watching One Piece. Back next week.
You could have done that. You could have done Dynamite in the Brain on that.
I would have had to make Anthony go and watch it. would he have liked it? There was probably not enough, Kizaru for his favourite character. Probably not enough of the Marines for his liking.
Mm-hmm. Anthony's a cop. Ever know that, like, a comic about a kind of anime about pirates and he associates with the cops?
I mean, I think it's because the cops dress like the Yakuza might be the reason why. Okay, we'll be back next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Yeah.